What's going on, guys? Zach here. Before we dive into this episode on family finances, I want to take a moment for you to reflect on the fact that I talk a lot about relationships. Your relationships with other men, your relationships with food, with your addictions, be it booze, drugs, whatever, porn. You know, relationships you have with your wife, relationships with your children. You know, one of the things we don't talk often about is your relationship with money. You know, and that's what today's discussion is on with Mark Allen Bovaer. Is about how you feel about money, the emotion that's connected with debt. I did a podcast before with Shadid El-Azhar, and he talked about how debt carries significant emotion. It's a lot of choices you made maybe in your past. Maybe you bought things to feel better because things weren't going great. You know, whatever it is, that debt means something to you. And we have to remove the emotion and just view it for what it is. Now, I'm not going to go too deep, you know, because that's what the podcast is for. The episode is great. Listen to it. It's fantastic from beginning to end. But I wanted to bring up, you know, today's sponsor is peacefulfathers.com. And a sponsor like that, you know, you're like, well, Peaceful Fathers, this is about finance. This is about relationships. Anthony Migliorino, who runs peacefulfathers.com, and you can be found on all social media at Peaceful Fathers, is constantly talking about peaceful relationships. We need to remove the trauma. We need to remove the shame and the regret that's around our financial choices. We need to look at our debt. We need to look at our savings. We need to look at what we're spending money on and bring peace to that relationship. You should be at peace with where you are and where you're going. Once you do that, you can strip the power away from the debt or the credit cards or whatever's hanging over you. That loan that you took out, you know, you can stop thinking, oh, I'm a bad person because of this. And that'll improve your relationship with yourself. All of a sudden, the negative talk is going away. All of a sudden, you're just speaking to yourself in a manner that's going to get you to where you want to go in a positive light. Yes, there is debt. Yes, there is a loan. Yes, you know, there are things that aren't optimal in your life, but you can fix them. You can either find ways to make more money. You can find ways to stop losing so much money and spending so much money. There are many ways to go about it, but none of that happens if you don't take the time to remove the power of money and what it has over you and to just look at it for what it is. So go forth into this episode and recognize it's time to change our relationship with money. And if you're looking to change your relationship with yourself and your children, again, our sponsor, peacefulfathers.com. Now, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And again, don't just listen, but apply the information exchanged. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Family Alpha Podcast, a place where men, families, and the truth have a voice. The information shared on this podcast is meant to be applied. Now, here is your host, Zach Small, founder of thefamilyalpha.com and co-founder of thefraternityofexcellence.com. Let's get to work.
Welcome back to another episode on the Family Alpha Podcast. As always, I am your host, Zachary Small, and today I'm joined by a very special guest I've been going back and forth with for years now, Mark Bovaer. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, Zach. Thanks for having me on, man.
I appreciate you taking the time to hop on here. So for those that don't know, Mark is a father of three. He's the author of the Finance and Fatherhood newsletter, as well as the founder of Frugability Finance. And that's incredibly relevant to today's discussion because we're going to be talking about debt, about squaring your finances away, and big time on stripping the power money has over you, or ways you can start that process at least. But Mark, for anything I may have missed that the listeners should know, what is, or who is rather, Mark Bovaer?
Well, I'm in these parts. It's been a long journey, as you said. You and I have gone back about 4 or 5 years or so, and it's been a fun time. You know, I came into these parts. I'm a single father. I've got three teens. They're, well, close enough. One's 11, but he eats like a teen, so I count it. And you know, my journey started, I got into the finance, you know, wing of the internet, so to speak, or the corner of the internet, back in about 2007. I had two young kids. I was really stressed out. I had like 30 grand worth of debt. You know, I was 27 years old, two kids, you know, just really felt like way underwater. I had a big long commute to a big stressful job. I was paying more in daycare than I was paying for my house payment. I mean, things were just really out of control. And so I started perusing personal finance websites and blogs and finding anything I could about finance to get that under control. And ironically, I have a finance degree. I'm a finance professionals. So, but, I guess whatever we apply in professional life doesn't always apply to personal life. Kind of like there's fat doctors, I guess, but, so for the next 4 or 5 years, my now ex-wife and I, we battled our way out of 30 grand of debt. We had another kid. It was just chaos to say the least, but we grinded and grinded. We got out of debt. By the time I was about 32, I was back out of debt and feeling pretty good. Things were kind of coming together. And then I found myself divorced and I was thrown back into a bunch of debt, legal fees. And we had to split a loss on a house and the housing market was bad. So we had a couple things and I was right back into the same amount of debt that I was 5 years earlier. And so it was a little bit of despair. It was a little disappointing. I say little. It was very disappointing. I was in a bad shape, and now I had one income instead of two to tackle the same problem that I had just tackled 5 years earlier. And so over the next 5-6 years, I dug my way back out of 30 grand of debt again, this time with, being a single dad with three kids and one income. But I grinded and I grinded. And finally, in about 2017, 2018, I killed the rest of that debt off. And that was a huge, huge relief to get there. And I thought by that point, I think I've learned enough where I can start sharing some tips and pointers for people and start to be a personality in the personal finance space. And I can share my journey. I can't tell you how to be a millionaire overnight because I'm not there yet, but I can help people get to where I am from where I was, if that makes sense. I can bring people along the path that I was on. And that's my mission now, is to bring people into a good standing. I think being debt-free, as we talked about before the show, is such a huge weight lifted from most families and for most people. So it's something I highly recommend everybody get to that point where you're debt-free. I've been there twice, got out twice. So you can too, and I'm here to help. And I hope we talk more about that today.
Absolutely. And it's that voice and angle that you take on the money that really, like I was saying, and to share some of my story for those who don't know, when I was in the military, I was an E6 over six when I got out. So that's when you start making like not good money, but you're making more than the shekels you were getting as an E4 and E5, and then when I left the Navy, we kept living like I was getting that paycheck. We kept that lifestyle that we had, the bills that we had, we kept everything, the cars, except I went from, this to my income, down here again. I was back to like making an E4, mm-hmm. And people see me now, like I had the blog then and it made literally $0 all year. I had the podcast mm-hmm. then, it made literally $0 all year. So even though I was doing these things, I was making no income. It was mm-hmm. just, my 9-to-5, which yep. was like 43 a year. And yeah. coming from 60, that was a pretty big hit.
Oh yeah.
So we found our way to credit cards. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we'll just swipe this because that's not real money, right? Yeah. it didn't leave the account. We can buy this TV. We can buy this moving thing. We've got a house. That house needs to be furnished. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we found ourselves, I think the number was 33,000 in credit card debt. And I was like, man, okay. Everybody has credit card debt. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where people, and I really want to start driving the point, for those listening, that was normal to me because society has made that normal to everybody. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to have credit card debt. You're supposed to have huge car payments. That's normal. You need the bigger house. I fell right into that trap. I openly jumped into it voluntarily.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure. I started my story at 27, but really if you go back, I was 19 years old in college and I got a Capital One MasterCard because they said you need to get a credit card to build credit. Right. And so that was like the advice I took, the advice just to get a credit card. And I was like, well, I'm not going to use it. I'm just going to have the credit card just to build up some credit. And I remember I was up at college at Michigan State, sophomore year of college. And we wanted some pizza rolls from the pizza place down the street. None of us had any cash. And I remember the very first time I used my credit card ever because I used it to order like these, these pizza rolls from this pizza place. I don't remember what it was now. And I swiped that card and that was the first time I ever used credit. And man, was that a slippery slope from there. I thought it's no big deal. I just don't have the cash. I'll pay it back later. Right. Ended up graduating college with a couple grand in credit card debt. And then got married. We had two incomes, no kids. That lifestyle trap you talked about, when you're like 23 years old and you've got two incomes, no kids, you're like, man, I'm going to go out and get a new car, at least a new truck.
Yeah, that's what you do.
We went to Alaska on a sweet vacation. We bought a brand new house. I mean, we did everything wrong, but it was like right there. Like, man, the two of us were making great money. We're just like kids. And, so I made every mistake you could make. So if you're listening to this and you haven't made those mistakes yet, listen to Zach and I, we've been there. Don't fall into that trap. Don't go down that path and you'll be okay. But man, was it, digging a hole from 19 to 27 was quite a trip.
That makes me wonder, in your upbringing, did your parents talk to you about money and finances to that degree?
Not a lot. No, money only came up in my household when it was sort of like there was a lack of it, you know? So like, oh man, I wish we could get a new car, or, you know, I wish we could take a nice vacation. It wasn't really talked about in like a money management thing. I don't think my parents were all that terrible at managing money or anything, but it was just not something that was really, you know, front and center at all.
Yeah. I think at least in my home, my experience was we didn't really, like, there was a taboo subject around it. And my stepmom was an accountant, or I believe she worked in the finance side of her family business. And she started the process of teaching us, you know, interest rates and how to use it. But I think I had already been imprinted with, you just don't talk about money, you know, by the time she had come into my life. And it was like, I had already decided, you know, we don't talk about money. It's a bad thing. It doesn't matter how much anybody makes, you know, it's like a dirty word. And then, dude, it just set me up for so many poor choices. Like, my kids are 11 and 8 now, and I'm already like talking to them about all these things. I'm talking about crypto just because I'm like, I want them fully aware of everything to not make the mistakes I made.
Everything. Yeah. I mean, I think 9-year-olds are more aware of crypto than most adults right now, but
solid point.
Yeah. They see stuff on online, but money, I think with kids, that's something I don't talk directly to my kids about money a lot, because I'm a firm believer that kids learn by viewing your habits more so than what you say. You know, you can sit down and have a lecture, and it goes in one ear and out the other, or they just want to get out of there. But if they see you day in, day out making decisions, and if you just vocalize those decisions as you make them, like teachable moments, I think kids will catch on. So, but yeah, definitely making a point to not make it secret in my house, to not keep money like as some taboo subject. Like, we just talk about it. It just is what it is. You know, you want something new, here's how you can afford it, and here's how we can afford it. And hey, Dad, why don't you drive a brand new car? Well, because here's why I can't afford it, and here's what I'm doing, and I'm trying to pay off this or that or whatever. So, you know, there's always teachable moments, and I say capitalize on those.
You know, and with that, I think the key word you used there, and I was going to ask how you did it, but you said it, you know, you vocalize it. You tell them, hey, I'm choosing to do this instead of that because of XYZ, or, you know, buy this or not buy this, you know, for these reasons. And then they can see, you know, hey, they're your actions. And now I know why you took those actions. And that goes a long way.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, and the other thing is, I don't want my kids to, you know, make the same mistakes I did. And so I talk about the mistakes I made. I think some people might be a little shy to do that. You know, admit mistakes to your kids. But man, once your kids know you're not perfect, it takes a lot of the stress off being a parent. And you can tell them, hey, I made a lot of these mistakes. You're going to make your own mistakes, but hey, at least you cannot make the same ones I did. And here you go.
The last podcast I did was with Tanner Guzzi. And it's incredible you just said that, because we were talking about how parents will paint this picture perfect image as to what their life is and what their marriage is. And there's no flaws in it. And then kids grow up trying to reach that ideal, and they never realize your dad had no idea what he was doing. Your mom had no idea. They were all figuring it out just like us. You know, there's so many flaws. And it's important we share that with the kids so they can see, like, oh, I will make a mistake. You made mistakes. We just keep carrying on. Don't make two in a row, or try not to make the same one.
No doubt. And you know, the biggest thing is not to beat yourself up about the mistakes, right? Like, I know we're kind of veering off into parenting, but you know, I take a lot about that too. You know, but as a parent, you're going to make mistakes. And I think maybe you posted this recently, I don't know, but you know, do you apologize to your kids when you make mistakes? And, you know, I do. I admit mistakes when I, you know, maybe I yelled them too much, or I, you know, didn't give them the benefit of the doubt or something or whatever. You know, I always fess up to that and tell them, hey, you know, I was wrong, and here's why I was wrong. So I don't have any shame in that. That's really a barrier. I think it's generational a little bit, you know, like, my parents didn't talk much to their parents about emotional things at all. And my parents did a little bit more to me, but now it's like that barrier has been broken. I feel like in our generation where things are more on the table and talked about, and I think we should capitalize on that.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. And that word shame, it has so much power to it. You know, yeah. Shame, it's such a heavy word, but I think that is tied to a lot of people's debts. You know, you're ashamed that maybe you went on a bender when you were a teen and you're recovering. I think a lot of the big wigs on Twitter, money Twitter, you know, all these social media that are flaunting, you know, what they're making. I think there's a lot behind the scenes that they'd be very ashamed if it came to light. I think there's a lot of, hey, you know, look over here, but don't look over there. Don't look at my 100K in debt. Look at the 10 grand I made this month online.
Well, my favorite one is, you know, this goes around a lot, but my favorite one is the, like, I retired early blogger, and they write this article about how they retired at like 35. And then if you get to like the 15th paragraph, it says that they have a working spouse who provides health insurance and like all this. Like, no, you're not retired at 35. You're a stay-at-home spouse at 35.
Call it
like,
what it is and own it, you know,
like own it up, or it'll be like, oh, and you know, my parents' trust fund inheritance put me over the top and now I'm good to go. You know, so like that's a big thing in the personal finance space is don't get jealous of other people of what they're doing. You know, so everybody's had a different situation. And the only thing you can do is take what you are doing right now where you're at and make the best of it. You can't compare yourself to somebody else, you know, and I really cringe in the personal finance space when people post all their like net worth, I'm worth a million or I'm worth this or whatever. It's like, you know, that's just kind of humble bragging. And I know they say, oh, it just kind of validates what I'm doing. It's like, no, just tell us what you did, you know, and how to get there. Don't be doing that stuff. So, but yeah, there's always a story behind it. I could go on. There's so many stories of, you know, working spouses or inheritances or, you know, windfalls or, you know, I got an insurance check for 100K because of a car accident or something. So there's very few people who, like you and I, you know, a lot of people find the personal finance space like I did when I was a young father and I was in a ton of debt and I had mortgages and car payments and I had all that stuff. And I was looking for answers. Well, the problem is I'm not going to relate to the guy who was single or, you know, two incomes, no kids and retired at 35 because I'm not in that situation. I'm 27 and I've got two kids and I've got a ton of debt. I can't be where he is. He was making 100K. His wife was making 100K and they retired at 35. Don't compare yourself to that person. You might learn a few tips from them, but that's why I'm in the space now is I want to set an example for people like normal people, right? Like most normal people, most normal guys who come across personal finance space are going to find some blogs and read some stuff and get pretty amped up to pay off debt and maybe retire early. I want to warn them about something that happens where you get caught in the cycle of kind of, you try to do something better. You try to do something different. You try to retire early and you never really get there. But in the meantime, you're kind of missing out on the present moment. You're missing out on what you could be doing with your family and stuff. And you're trying to escape the 9-to-5 when you could be making what, you know, the best of the 9-to-5. I mean, people crap on 9-to-5s all the time and don't want to do the job. And some of us get out of it, right? Like I'm on my way, you've made it. A lot of people have kind of like worked their way out of the 9-to-5, but there's different ways to do it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but like the prevailing advice in the personal finance space is that you have to save a couple million bucks and then you can retire early. Well, people like you, you found a different avenue in the sense that you built a business that eventually allowed you to quit your day job and you can work on the business full time. And I wouldn't necessarily call that retirement, but it's like, you're not doing the day-to-day 9-to-5, you're doing something for yourself now. And so I think we need to redefine what people are looking to do in the personal finance space, maybe build businesses or cash flow that can get them out of the 9-to-5 that they don't like. But in the meantime, don't hate every day of your life, because a lot of times you'll be in that 9-to-5 and you'll try to find something that'll get you out and you'll try for years and years and years and not make it. And in the meantime, you've just been miserable hating where you are. And so the key to getting out is embracing where you are. embrace it fully, give your 9 to 5 your all, give it everything you've got. Then you can, you'll start to see dividends pay off in other ways when you build that work ethic and when you get into that frame of mind of doing things really well, even at your 9 to 5. You come home and you apply that to your business or your side hustle or whatever you're doing, and it's going to carry over into all areas of your life. You're going to be a better father. You're going to be a better worker. You're going to be a better husband. All that stuff carries over. And so don't just sit there miserable in 9 to 5 hoping to get out. Work your ass off. Do a good job in your 9 to 5 and carry that over and do something outside to work your way out.
Yeah, I mean, and that mindset is exactly why I wanted to talk to you. Like, if I had to get a snippet, it was right there, you know, that it's that approach to it. It's, you're not chasing anybody else's ideals. You're not, you know, it's, I don't want to know how you paid off 100K and now you're a millionaire. Like, I want, what was your mindset in that process? Mm-hmm. And to your point, you know, on everybody's chasing the product at the expense of the process, but that process is life. That's you going out with the kids. That's you spending time, you know, with your spouse or whatever you have going on. That's you like in the moment, you know, and to my point, I left the job not to do nothing. This is now the job. It's just a different job, you know, but when I had the job, I went to the job and I literally posted something this morning. It was, I would rather work a 9 to 5 that gave me time with my family as opposed to being an entrepreneur that I was always gone and had to do something else.
Yeah.
And somebody was like, well, being an entrepreneur and working hard will get you that freedom. No, it will. But I'm saying if I had to choose one or the other, if those were my choices, I'd rather work and build up and work at a factory, but have all the time in the world with my family and say I'm free, quote unquote, but I don't enjoy the process of what I love. And my top priority is being with my family.
100%. 100%. I mean, I've always prioritized being with my family, and that's probably set me back in my career and set me back in side business work, but I've never regretted that ever. Right. Like I would trade, I'm 41 and I would trade as much time as possible now for time like when I'm 60. Right. Like I can be sitting around doing nothing when I'm 60 and retired by working my tail off right now, or even 50. Like let's say I want to retire early at 50. I could work and bust my butt 60, 80 hours a week between my day job and side hustle, and I could retire at 50. Well, guess what? In 10 years, my kids are grown and moved out of the house, and then I'm retired. So what? Right? Like this is the time that I want to spend with my kids. If I have to work a little harder when I'm 50 and they're all moved out, so be it. I don't care. Right? They're going to be gone. They're going to be doing their own thing. I got more time to work and I'm not missing out. So I've always viewed that as a trade-off that I'm willing to make. You know, now obviously I'd love to like kind of have the best of both worlds, right? And get out of the 9 to 5 and do something, you have more time now. But right now my 9 to 5 doesn't take up so much time that I can't be there for my kids. And so I'm not going to grind out an extra 20 hours a week away from my kids to try to escape that. Not right now. It's just not in the cards for me. I'd rather be there for my kids. And, you know, I'm grind out 5 or 6 hours a week on a side hustle and I'm making progress and I might get there, but I'm not going to go the extra mile that people talk about grinding all the time because my kids are 11, 13, and 15, and they're only here a couple more years. This is my time to be with them.
I got chills when you said that. I've been having that same, you know, like recognition that like they're growing, you know, like it's, we've been doing this, you know, I think it was like 4 years when we crossed paths, like they're not slowing down with their growing up, you know, they're growing up right before all of our eyes. It's intense.
Oh yeah. I mean, I took my 15-year-old son out driving, you know, he's got his learner's permit and I'm just like, oh my God, dude, like this is going by so quick, you know, and my 13-year-old, my 15-year-old, they want to spend time with their friends more than they want to spend time with me, which is great, right? That's the whole goal of parenting, but it's a reminder that this time is fading quickly. And, you know, I'm going to take full advantage of the next, you know, 6 or 7 years until my youngest hits college age. And, you know, then I'll figure some stuff out from there, but I'm not worried about it. I'm not overly focused. I think we have this obsessive focus in this country on like retirement and like, it's been ground in our heads, you know, 401ks and that's all, that stuff's all great, but it's all this end goal of like sitting around and taking cruises when you're 60. And like, first of all, none of that appeals to me. That sounds awful. But I mean, like, it sounds terrible to me, but you know, I don't want to live that lifestyle that most people live when they're 60 or 65. They just want to be like retired and do nothing and take cruises and eat out every night for dinner. And, you know, at 4 PM and do that, whatever. whatever the old people do. And I don't really care. Like, I want to work forever. Like, I always want to be doing something. As long as I'm physically and mentally able to work, I'm going to work because I love doing it. I love working. I love getting up and having a purpose every day. And so it changes my mindset. I don't have this mindset of like, I want to have $5 million by the time I'm 60. And then I'm just going to sit on the beach till I die. Like, that sounds, that thought has scared me my entire life. That thought, that vision of being kind of done with my work and done with my responsibilities and just sitting around and enjoying the life, that doesn't sound very fun to me at all. Like, I want responsibilities. I want shit to do. I want stuff to take care of. I want life to go on all the way to the end. You know, like, I want to be in it right to the end. And I don't want to just coast out in my last 20 years and call it a day. So that just changes my mindset. I don't think that far ahead. I put money in my 401k. I do whatever I got to do to make sure that I'm taken care of when I'm that age, but that's not my focus at all. In fact, I don't want that time to come, right? Like, that means the time has passed and my kids have moved out and all that stuff. That's all. I'm not going to look forward to that. It's just going to be a thing that happens.
And I think that highlights really well, you know, the point on priorities. Mm-hmm. You know, your priority is to be able to maximize the time you have. And that's less of a priority than saying, I won't have to lift a finger at 60 or whatever.
Yeah.
Your priority is now and living.
Yeah. 100%. I've never regretted doing that. I've always, you know, I've missed happy hours. I probably missed promotions. I probably, you know, stepped backward in my career over the years because I've always been home. You know, I haven't missed a practice or a game for my kids. I've been there the whole time. I'm not saying that's wrong to miss if you got to work, right? Like, if I had to be there, I had to be there, but, you know, I always took care of my responsibilities, but as soon as I was done, I'd be home and I'd be there for my kids. And I'm never going to regret that. And I don't think any father out there will regret that, you know?
No, absolutely not. I saw somebody the other day call you the OG dad on Twitter. And yeah. I was like, yeah. And like, that wisdom right there is exactly why.
Yeah. But yeah.
I think, you know, you also highlighted something with, when it came to prioritizing the time you can have with them. There's this concept. So I went hunting for the first time. I was 33 when I did it. So
yeah,
I'm 34 now. It was like 2 months ago. And I'm sitting there, I'm alone in the woods, no phone, no anything. It's just me waiting for a coyote to come in my crosshairs, which never happened, which sucked.
Yeah.
But I did have this great insight, so that helped. And I was just going through my life, you know, my message, what I'm putting out there. I'm always trying to really strip away any fog or any gray area as to who I am. Because the whole angle is to be like, here is me, you know? And in that, I was like, well, what's left to improve and work on and dial in, mm-hmm. you know? And I came, somehow my brain just went to debt. Mm-hmm. And Jackie and I, we were in this, I want to call it like this perpetual debt loop where, you know, that number was 33K in 2015 and 16 and 17. And we'd pay it down. It would come back up with interest. Yeah. We'd pay it down. Mm-hmm. It would come back. And it was just a roller coaster where it was at that number where we paid just enough to get it down, but never enough to get it to go down. We couldn't outpay the interest because we didn't care. We were paying the minimum. We were doing whatever.
Yeah.
Because it was normal.
Yeah.
And alone in the woods, you know, it just something clicked.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, I don't want that anymore. And I think as you were talking, you know, it connected some dots on, I think I prioritize freedom in my life. And if I'm beholden to this bill coming in or these cards or whatever, mm-hmm. somebody owns me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a servant to them. I've got to pay that.
Yeah.
So what I did is right when I get back from that trip, I spoke with some dudes, and again, it was almost a source of shame. I'm like, here I am leading all these people, and I didn't even realize I was failing in that area. I thought normal people had debt, normal people paid their bills. My bills are all paid. I have no debt collectors banging on my door. I'm a normal dude.
Yeah.
But I had debt.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know, like, that's not cool. So I had been investing in crypto. Crypto was doing well, super happy, all green candles, no red candles at that point. And I cashed out a lot of it. You know, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to take this now. And instead of having this, we were talking earlier before we recorded, you know, if you have $1 million in crypto, that doesn't mean you have $1 million in your bank account.
Yeah.
You don't have $1 million to sell.
Yeah.
I sold.
Yeah.
I dropped it on debt, and that 33 turned really fast to an 11. And then as of a few days ago, that 11 turned into a 9.
Nice.
Very soon that 9 is going to be a freaking 0. My aim is to just hit as hard as I can with everything. And then I'm hoping by April, it's just gone.
Yeah.
That's money where I could have put more into crypto.
Yeah.
That's money we could have gone on vacation. Mm-hmm. I could have bought a new gun. You know, all these cool things I want.
Oh yeah.
But priorities. Mm-hmm. My priority was freedom. I want to be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
What is your advice for people to start spinning their relationship when it comes to debt and you work with them?
Well, obviously the first step, I don't like to get into too much technicalities because there's a million books out there that'll tell you like how to pay off your debt, right? It'll give you 5 steps and those are all great, right? But that's not really what I do because there's a million of those, but there's only one of me. So obviously the number one thing is to stop taking on more debt. Like just make debt. The number one thing is to like make debt a big no-no for you. Like, you know, like I know you've given up alcohol, right? So like alcohol is
another huge one,
right? Right. Alcohol is like a no-no, right? Like you've just written it off. Right. And then you're stuck, you're sticking to that. So, you know, the same thing that, with debt, you have to just look at it. Like I've quit debt. I'm done. I quit forever. You know, today is the day is the last day that I will ever take on more debt. And then you start a counter just like you would with alcohol or nicotine or whatever. Just say, that's it. I'm done. So you have to change your mindset and make it. It's an absolute no-no. Like with kids and I, we still kind of, you know, carry over from the childhood, but we say certain things are no-nos, right? And it's simple and childish, but it's true. Like no-no, like we have no-no foods where like certain foods we just don't eat because they're just so terrible for you. We don't eat them in this house. We say no-no foods. So no debt. You're like, you're just done. You've sworn it off just like alcohol. So you have to believe that, you have to commit to that, and you have to be done with that. That's the number one thing. Okay. The second thing is to, number one, don't rush out. And I know the instinct is to rush out and like try to pay it off as fast as you can. And a lot of people get kind of like tunnel vision and try to pay it all off. And
that's,
I think,
me.
That,
just 100%. Right. Yeah, that's probably me right now.
Yeah. And that was me too. Like I think, but what I see a lot of people do, and like you're successful, you're succeeding because you've succeeded at a lot of things. But I think in general, a lot of people, it's like dieting, right? Like they jump in and they're going to go full in at paying off their debt. And that's going to be their sole focus for whatever. Well, most people do that with diets too, right? They're going to go like keto or they're going to do whatever. And they go 100% in and then like 2 months in and they give up because it's hard and you kind of just want to treat yourself. And so I caution against that. Don't go like crazy, give up everything, you know, start making your coffee at home. If you like your coffee, you know, all that stuff. If you go too crazy, you're going to hate it. And you're going to put yourself at a risk for like a relapse. As long as you stop taking on debt, you can start chipping away at it a little bit at a time. And then like you said, with your crypto, the biggest thing that's going to pay off a debt for most people is a windfall. So there's going to be either you're going to cash out an old pension fund that sat around or an old retirement account or an old savings account, or, you know, you're going to get an inheritance or you're going to get a big tax refund or you're going to get, you know, cash out your crypto, whatever it is, there's going to be that thing that comes in and helps you slam that debt out. So the key is to stop making it bigger, start chipping away at it a little bit at a time, you know, just up your minimum payments by a little bit, like $100 a month or something, and kind of chip away. And eventually that windfall will come and just use it and just hammer it and be done with it. And you'll feel great. And I can tell you that the biggest motivation for me is when you do a budget and you don't have any debt, like you can sit down and I write down like house payment. Like I'm not going to pay off my mortgage. I have my reasons. Like I've been a big proponent of, in this environment where you can get 2% mortgages, it's hard to justify paying it off. But, you know, so I have a mortgage and I have car insurance, you know, and I have some utility bills and like, that's it. And I add it all up and I'm like, oh my God, I could like meet all of my basic needs for like $2,000 a month, you know, and that's an incredible freeing feel. That's the freedom you're talking about, where like, man, that's so, I mean, if I've got $10,000 in my checking account, I can live for 5 months just on what's in my checking, if anything got bad, you know? And so that's the freedom, right? And that's the end goal. And so you got to put yourself into that position where that's what you really want. And I can tell you from experience, it is what you want. Because when you don't have to pay very many bills, you don't have to think about bills. You don't have to think about anything. You just, you know, pay the 2 or 3 you got, and it's simple and they stay the same and life is easy. And you know that you can get by on very little if you need to. That's why my finance business is called Frugability. So it's like, you have the ability to be frugal if you want, but you don't have to. Like, you know, if your expenses are $2K a month and you're making $5K and you're getting money, putting money aside, you can go buy the gun or you can go, you know, on the vacation or you can do all that. But then if times get tight or, you know, income starts to dry up or something, you can, you have the ability to be frugal and you can jump back down. You can live off $2,000 and live cheaply and make it last and kind of hunker down. And so always put yourself in that position. But the key to being debt free or the real treat to it is that you have options and you have freedom.
You know, and I think while listening to that, I hope the listener or viewer understands, they see people who are doing things online that, you know, mm-hmm. they hear, oh, you're running, you know, the Frugability Finance.
Yeah.
Or you got the Family Alpha, Zach.
Yeah.
I'm not the Tate brothers.
Yeah. You know?
Like yeah. There are certain people who have achieved so much in life and they're yeah. that top 1%. But people, I think, let me know if I'm off base here, but I think when people see anybody who makes something online, they're put into this, well, that's, you're different. You know, you're up there. And I'm like, dude, I'm a dad with two kids.
Yeah.
Like I have bills. I have debt. I have just normally, like, what are you talking about? I just, my job is to speak to people and write. That's the only difference. You know, it's the same thing as going to wherever. It's a little different in that I control my time, but my life experiences, my stresses, my day to days, it's the same as 90% of the people out there.
Yeah.
But when you kind of shirk that off, you're like, oh, well, and I think this is another attempt at normalizing debt. Oh, well, you're different.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I'm different. I think we have a society that has said you're supposed to be ridden, you know, with debt.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the biggest, that's the biggest roadblock, right? Is like, you sort of like talk yourself, you set these limitations on yourself without realizing it. You're like, oh, well, that guy's different than me, so I can't really achieve what he's done. He's got something different. I'll tell you a story. So I used to consume all these finance blogs in like 07, 08 when they were huge. And I used to be so jealous of these like bloggers because they were so huge and, you know, famous, right? Like internet famous. And I used to think, man, that'd be great. These guys have it made. They're so awesome. I can't believe they can do that. I could never do that, whatever. Well, now I'm like good friends with several of them. We chat on DMs. I got their phone numbers. We met on Twitter. You know, I've got more followers than some of them. I'm like, this is a very surreal experience because 13 years ago, I was like in awe of these people. And now I'm one of them, you know, on the same level, if not more. And it's very surreal, but you have to start, right? Like, I'll tell you the story. I did a podcast a couple of years back and you were on it yourself and I've shut it down and I've got a new one now, but I started that podcast. It was like a cold December after Christmas where I was feeling a little antsy and I felt like I wasn't living up to my potential. And I felt like if I didn't start doing something different, I was going to live out every day the same, right? So like every single day was going to be exactly the same. I didn't really love my job. I was kind of like stuck in this rut and things weren't changing. And I thought to myself, there's no way, unless I get up one day and do something different than the day before, none of that's going to change. And so I grabbed this like $100 Dell laptop that I had that was a piece of garbage. And I bought this mic that I'm still using here. For $70, I plugged it in, I threw on some headphones, and I started to record my first podcast. Like, no, I had no idea. I looked up how to record a podcast, you know, and I used some junky software. I didn't have any of the right equipment or anything, but I did it. And a couple of months later, I had tens of thousands of people listening to my podcast. And so it's like, you just have to start, right? And the start is ugly and painful. And it's like, you hate every minute of it. You look back and you cringe about it, but you have to do that. And so I did that. I broke the seal with that podcast. And then since then I've done it. I broke the seal and I started to send out emails and I started to write blog posts and I started to write newsletters and I started to do a podcast again. And I just started to make, you know, write a book and I built a spreadsheet that people can use for finance. And so every one of those starts felt terrible. Like it felt like you think starting some new venture is exciting and new. No, it's actually like, it's sort of like dragging your ass to the gym at 4 a.m. when you haven't gotten up before 8 in 6 months. You know, it's like your mind doesn't want to do that. Your mind wants to just do the same thing over and over again. What's comfortable, get in the groove. Your mind just wants to slot right in there and stay. And to break that, it takes a fight. You have to fight. You have to get up one day and say, I'm not going to do the same thing I did yesterday because I don't want to live the same life I did yesterday. And so that's how, you know, you and I are here. That's how I'm like a you know, who I am on the internet and whatever you want to call it. And you have to get over all those hurdles, right? The imposter syndrome, where I was like, I can't write on the internet. There's people way better than me, right? Well, now some of those people that I looked up to on the internet are sending me notes saying, dude, your newsletter was awesome. You're a great writer. Thank you. You know? And so, and that was just because I started to do it. And if it sucks, so what? Nobody would read it, right? Like, no, it doesn't matter, because there's nothing to be ashamed of. It's that shame that you were talking about. It's all about the shame. You have to start somewhere. You have to do something. Same with the debt. If you want to get out of debt, you got to do something different today that you didn't do yesterday. You have to do something today. Figure out what it is that you're going to do different and do it and stick with it. Figure it out. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be ugly. It can be dumb. I mean, you can switch from shopping at Whole Foods to Walmart or something. Whatever step you take, it's a reminder. You broke the stasis and you got on the next step.
You know, I think that highlights so well the image of the product and the process.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about me typing up the description to this episode and sending you the invite and us linking up schedules. They do not care. They care about this discussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not pretty how the sausage is made. They just want to eat it. You know, they just want the info, the intel, us having a talk, you know, seeing what we're doing.
Yeah.
The same thing with debt. It's not pretty when you're like, oh, I can't go to the bar. Or, you know, I'm not going to go out to eat with you guys. I'm just going to go dump it on debt. Yeah. But at the same time, when you're listening to Dave Ramsey podcast or whatever, and you hear that couple like, oh, we paid our house off or we're debt free. You can be that person. It's cool. That product is super cool to hear.
Yeah.
But you're skipping over it. They didn't go out to eat. You know, they didn't buy, you know, any fancy clothes, no vacations, nothing, none of those extras, because that's not fun to talk about. But that's what you do to be able to experience that. But in that experience, you know, it makes that end product so much more worth it. And it's like fitness. If I give you a pill right now, brought you to whatever body fat percent you want, whatever size muscle you want, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Like, cool. Look at me. But your mindset would never change and you would jack that body right back up.
Oh, yeah.
I think the same with finances. If I give you a million, or not a million, but like whatever the number is, you know, it's a million as a kid was so big. That's always the number you go to.
So huge.
Whatever number, that number was.
Yeah.
Pay off all your debts. You'd be back in debt if you hadn't fixed up here first.
Well, that's why I think the statistics, like 70% of lottery winners go bankrupt within 5 years. I mean, that's like the most startling one out there, because you can't just give people money and it fixes their problems. They have to fix their problems, and then the money will take care of itself. And that's the same. It's the same for everything, right? Like the jacked dude at the gym with the six pack abs. What you don't see is that he was up at 5 a.m. every single day doing that. And he's cooking chicken and broccoli in his kitchen on Sunday afternoon and putting 5 Tupperware containers out. And he goes home and he does that. And he goes to bed at 9 o'clock every night. And he does all these things. You don't see any of that like the grind behind it. You just see, oh dude, he's a dude with six pack abs, man. I wish I could do that. And that's the same thing with debt. You see the people, I pulled up the sign, I paid off 40K in debt, but you don't see the grind. You got to get in the grind, and it's ugly. We want things to be easier. Our mind wants to find the path of least resistance. And like any of these things that are worthwhile are going to be ugly, and they're going to be filled with resistance. And like you said, it's totally normal to be in debt. Like I bought a house at 24, way out of my price range, because that was like the normal thing. They said, just buy as much house as you can buy. People said, that's totally normal. Just buy as much house as possible and do it. And if you have to take on some debt for a while, it's no big deal, you know, and you know, go ahead and borrow for a car and go ahead and borrow for this and go ahead and borrow for that. It's all normal. Just like it's normal to be 30 pounds overweight and have a dad bod and all that kind of stuff, right? Like it's totally normalized, but that doesn't mean it's right or it's good or it's the best way to live. And so you got to fight against that. And everything in the world is going to push you one way, and you're fighting against all of it. They don't want you to be debt-free, right? Like nobody wants you to be debt-free, because they're not making money off you if you're debt-free. Nobody, there's no business that benefits when you're debt-free. So, you know, that's how you got to look at it. You're on your own. You're doing this by yourself. There's no company out there. There's nothing you can search for on Amazon that's going to make you debt-free. So take care of it. Accept that it's a grind and look forward to that. Eventually you look forward to it and you look forward to the messiness. Like if it's things are too easy, you start to get uncomfortable, right? Like you probably get that way. I get that way now that I'm
in this looking world. Around. I'm like, wait right. a minute.
Yeah. Like I get, you know, I get in this world where I'm creating content, and every time I create a newsletter or a product or something, it's painful and hard and it challenges me mentally. And then if I go too long where I feel pretty easy, like I realize I'm not moving forward if it's too easy, too long. And that's kind of where we all are. And applies to money too.
You know, and I think it, everything we see on social media, everything we see on the news, it supports that, that the message coming out is like, no, it's good. Buy more, buy the next thing. Your phone only has two cameras on it. You need three. Your house only has two garages. It needs three.
You know?
And people are like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. More, more, more.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a toxic loop.
Oh.
But to break it, it's just like, you know, your body. If you want your body to start looking better, you got to start putting better things into it.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to you and maybe the finance or finance and fatherhood newsletter, you know, are there certain resources that you lean on, whether it be apps or approaches or your own app that you think would be better for people to put into them so that as they're reading it and as they're using these things, it'll be a positive loop that supports a debt-free life or a more financially free life?
Yeah, I think the number one, and this is my huge point for everybody, is to, you have to start by tracking your finances, every penny, where it goes. It's sort of like starting out on a diet. You got to track every calorie, like MyFitnessPal or something. And it doesn't matter where or how you do it. I think the best method, and this isn't, I don't sell this. It's just a pen and paper, right? Grab a notebook, you know, from the dollar store and so in a bag of pens. And so for $2, you walk out of there and you got everything you need to start this journey. And what you do is every single day, you sit down for 5 minutes and you write down everything that you spent money on and everything that brought money in. So what I do is I just sit down with a notebook. I open up my banking app on my phone or on my computer, and I just go through every and write down every transaction, because I do everything through my debit card. So it's all there, right? Don't track cash. Don't get caught up in the details. Like if you take out $20, just write down, I took out $20. Like don't, if you spend it on gum, don't write down gum. Don't write down coffee. Like people get too caught up in that. Just write down everything that you spend money on, you know? So then you'll get an idea of like, well, man, I spent like $400 last month on random cash crap. Okay. That's something I need to rein in, right? Like you don't need to like know that you spent $400 on gum and beer and whatever, you know, just know in general where it is, but you got to write it all down. Everything's got to be written down. Every transaction that you make with your card, or every time you take money out of the ATM, and then every time you get a paycheck, you have to write that down. There's nothing psychologically that does it better than just writing it down. I have an app or a spreadsheet that I sell. I'm not really pushing it right now because I really want people to just use pen and paper. It's just like the best way to do it. Once you graduate from that, you can get into my spreadsheet, and we'll talk about that later, but it's just a pen and paper. Sit down every night for 5 minutes. It takes 5 minutes to write it down, for real. Everybody's like, you look at your screen time on your phone, you have 5 minutes. Trust me, everybody's got five extra minutes. And so that's the biggest mindset shift there is. That's my number one thing I tell every client that I work with and my coaching is write it down. We're not coaching unless you write down, the first week is you write down every transaction, and then we talk about what you learned from that, because you learn more from that than any other, you know, exercise out there. I don't care what app you use. If you want to use an app, find an app. I don't care. There's plenty, but pen and paper is the best.
Now, you were talking about how the mind immediately goes to comfort.
Yeah.
And again, as I say this is not financial advice. Yeah. This is just the discussion.
Yeah.
For those who, let's say they have 6 credit cards, would you recommend they consolidate that through a consolidation loan or anything to streamline it to, here's one bill you have, if they can?
Yeah, I think that psychologically that helps. I think ambiguity creates stress, and the more ambiguous things are, the more likely you are to throw in the towel. Like the more complicated a diet is, right?
Yep.
The more people fall off, or the faster they fall off. Same with like weightlifting, right? Like I've never stuck with a weightlifting program longer than the simple Stronglist 5x5, where you just do the same 5 exercises every week. Yeah. Right. And so the same thing with finance. Like if you look at and you're paying 6 different credit cards, you got money all over the place. They got different interest rates. It's all messy and ugly. I think the messier it is, I'm a huge fan of streamlining. I'm a huge fan of using one debit card, keep one credit card for emergencies only. And everything you do goes through that debit card. Everything you spend goes through it. Everything's in one place, one account. Don't have separate accounts. I mean, if you have a business, you need a separate account. But like for personal, some people like throw money. Oh, this is my spending account, and this is my, you know, variable expenses account, whatever. Don't overcomplicate it. One account. And if you got 6 credit cards, try to consolidate them. Sometimes you can roll them into one card. Like you can do a balance transfer. Sometimes you can go to your bank and get like a consolidation loan. There's places like LendingTree or Prosper where you can get a peer-to-peer loan, which I've done. When I was getting out of debt, I went and got a Prosper loan where people crowdfund your loan. Mm-hmm. Put it all in one place. And once it's all in one place, it's a lot easier to like scoreboard watch too. Like you go and look, okay, my debt's at 16 grand and it's all in one spot. You don't have to add up 5 credit cards, which is a huge pain and nobody wants to do that. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of consolidating, find it one spot, put it in one spot. Usually you can get a pretty good interest rate. Like on Prosper, if you have good credit, you can usually get a pretty decent, like better than credit cards anyway. And you can put yourself on that path. But if you're going to do that, the biggest thing to do, if you're going to consolidate, is you have to get rid of the other credit cards as soon as you pay them off. Because the big trap is people consolidate and then things get away from them and they start to charge up.
It opens up that credit.
Right.
And they start using that credit.
Right. Then they start using that credit.
Well, now your loan's full and the cards are full again.
So you just doubled your debt because you consolidated it and then you charged up the cards again. So if you're going to do that, if you're going to consolidate, you have to, they say it's not good for your credit, but I don't care about credit as much. I say close the accounts. Like you need no temptation to use those at all. Like even cutting up the card doesn't do it. Cause like I had a Best Buy card once where I paid it off. I cut it up. Right. But if you go in Best Buy, you can still charge things to your card just by telling them your social security number. Right. And so then I go in and I buy some, and I'm like, oh, I still have an account here. Just close the accounts, get rid of them. Remember you're debt free. You know, if you're an alcoholic, you're not going to keep like a six pack in the back of the fridge,
It's funny you say, I was just thinking of it in that way. So I wrote this down. You said it earlier, staying sober from credit. And I wrote down, sober from credit cards. You know, the way I see booze, it's not like I have a sip now and like, there's no booze. not a discussion. That's like, I'm at 230 something. I'm never going back. Yeah, like I'm closing it on a year. Yeah, we're tracking. Yeah. But when I see like those just swipes. So what we did is as we paid it down, it's down, like I said, it's like 9 point something K on one card right now. We had a few cards. Mm-hmm. And I remember like as that number was going down, I was like, yes, it was like that super proud, seeing the number change and then seeing my number go up with sobriety. It's another one of those like, awesome. Like, I can't wait to hit 1 year. I can't wait to hit 2 years. There's a psychological game being played here.
Oh yeah.
And dude, and I kind of want to spin this towards your spreadsheet, and kind of talk about that. But when these people start to see, let's say that they're 15K in debt and that 15 turns to 14. Yeah. That 14 is a 13. Dude, there is, I'm getting like pumped up now just thinking about it. There's a sense of pride and just momentum and happiness. It's like when you see that first vein in your arm and then some abs and the V, like it's the same thing as in any sense of self-improvement. Once you see that little bit, you want to double down on it. You're like, oh, I'm definitely going to eat right today. I can finally see an ab, or I'm definitely going to not buy a random thing, with a card because I'm so close to turning that 14 to a 13.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just a wicked game. And I'm wondering, with your spreadsheet, how, or if you get people kind of on that thing where they're seeing the number change and each time they plug it in, is it one of those things they update each month or how does that work?
Well, it's something you update every day. And so it's a daily tip. I've set it up when I built the spreadsheet. The biggest challenge I had was with most apps and software and everything was that there was no daily accountability. Like to me, it should be every day. And so I had a line set up for every single day. So you put your transactions in daily. So, but even beyond the spreadsheet, I think if you're trying to pay off debt, you need visuals and not even just the spreadsheet, because the spreadsheet, you got to go into the computer and you got to look at it, right? I say, if you're paying off debt, you take a chart, you take a piece of paper, or some type of chart, figure it out. There's charts you can print on the internet. If you look up debt charts, like there's a million of them, print them off, slap it on your fridge or something, or tape it up somewhere like on your mirror in your bedroom or something. And you want to look at that all the time. And you want to be able to fill in, like to me, there's nothing more gratifying than having a chart that shows your debt payoff and you fill in like little boxes or you move a little line or whatever. And you just do that every day. And it's right in front of you. It's got to be in front of your face all the time. I'm a huge fan of visuals and gamification, make it a fun game, say like, I want to get down to this level by this day and you go after it. Right. And you just attack, but you got to see it every day. And my spreadsheet's great. I love it. I'm like not downplaying my spreadsheet because it works, but even beyond that, you can use the spreadsheet and then take what's in the spreadsheet and put it up on the fridge, and just write that every day. Take a note card and put it on a magnet and put a new number on there every single day, whatever your debt number is, whatever you like to do, just put it up there. Some people put those big giant, like poster board note type things up and just draw a graph. Some people have a whiteboard where they just change the number every day. Whatever you want to do, it's got to be a visual. It's got to be in front of you because that's what's fun, right? Like it's the same thing with working out and same thing with anything, any visual. You want to see the scoreboard move. Like I'm a scoreboard watcher, right? Like we're scoreboard watchers by nature. We want to see the tally. We want to know, you know, you turn on a sporting event on TV. What do you want to see? You want to see the score in the corner. It's so annoying when you turn on the TV and there's no score up. You're like, well, what's going on? So same thing with debt. You got to have it up there and have it in front of you all the time. Whatever you get, even if you change your background on your phone to like your debt number, whatever it is. Dude,
I have an app like every morning and evening, it pings me, you know, it starts the day, you know, we're going to stay sober. And at the end of the day, it's, did you complete your goal? Mm-hmm. And I check the number and it's a habit now. It's a part of my daily ritual. And every now and then I'll share it as like motivation or a topic, you know, for others. But for me, that's an every single day thing. I'm yes, like keep growing.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Yeah, it's got to be right there.
There's another angle on scoreboard that I wanted to talk to you about, and that was the team.
Yeah.
You know, if you make it fun, the way you're saying, I think it's a gamification, which is a word I'm going to use from now on.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you can get the wife and the kids, you know, on board or anybody that you're doing this with, you know, maybe it's a sibling or somebody you're working with, you know, when it's a team, like, hey, we are winning. We are putting these points up. We're doing this. All of a sudden it's less, oh, we can't go out to eat. Oh, we can't do this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a positive. Have you seen that or with people that you've worked with?
Absolutely. I think, well, first of all, kids love that, right? Like kids love to scoreboard watch. You know, they don't care about debt, but if you throw that up there and you say, here's what we're trying to do. And if we achieve this, we're going to like go on a trip, you know, or we're going to, first thing we're going to do after we pay off all our debt is, you know,
go back to debt.
Right. Yeah. Right. I don't mean like do it instantly, but like, you know, like there's going to be some reward at the end. There's got to be some sort of, a thing to look forward to, especially if you're going to get your kids and stuff involved. But yeah, I mean, the scoreboard is huge, especially for your spouse. You got to be on the same page. You got to be, know what that's the goal front and center. And you know, nothing does that like a scoreboard up front. I think that's a big thing with virtual world. And this is a big hurdle I've tried to cross and I'm still working towards in my frugability business, but is that we don't connect psychologically with like numbers on a screen the same way we do with like cash money in our wallet or like numbers on a piece of paper. And so that's why I'm a huge proponent of pen and paper. I'm also a huge proponent of cash and things like that, because when you got a couple 20s in your wallet and you have no credit cards, you're going to go out and you're going to think about everything you spend money on, right? And you're going to like you physically feel the money leaving your presence. And so, you know, as you know, as the money goes out, there's less and less, and you kind of like, you can be gauge pretty well what's left in your wallet. Like, but we don't gauge what's left in our bank account nearly as well, right? Like if you start the week with $200 in your wallet and you've gone and, you know, bought some gum and you went, you know, here and went there and spent a few bucks here and there, most guys will tell you like within a few bucks, how much is in left in that wallet. But if you're swiping that debit card or you're swiping that credit card, you can't, you just don't, it's like, you don't know. Your mind doesn't like grasp that. There's no like physical connection. So our mind doesn't hold on to pixels on a screen the same way. And so with everything being digital, you know, you have to make it real as possible. And for, you know, with your family, having a scoreboard up, that's real. For you, for me personally, I think writing on a pen and paper and having cash and just making things as physically real as possible really changes the game. And it's really important. It's sort of the same thing, you know, just don't have alcoholic, wouldn't have beer in the fridge, you know, take the credit cards out of your wallet, do all those little things, but make it real. The goal has to be right in front of you.
No, I dig it. You know, I'm 100% with you. You know, I think instead of trying to, again, I guess this goes back to shame, you know, instead of trying to hide it, just openly, overtly address it. Like, hey, here's the cash we have to spend because we're not going to go into the digital money.
Yeah.
You know? Like, oh, well, I got to use money because I'm paying with cash now. Like, no, own it. Like, it's cool. Like, I'd much rather talk to somebody who openly is like, yeah, I'm looking to pay off debt than somebody who is talking to me like, just, you know, a total waste consumer. I'm like, awesome. Like, you have these things, but you are like horribly, like, you're not in shape. You know, you're not happy. Yeah. You have this huge mountain of debt behind you that you're scared to look at. Like, I'd rather talk to somebody that's real and genuine about their wins and losses than somebody who's sharing total success, even though you know this has come at an expense. And I know what the expense is to a degree, because at 34, I you can see, I know how much this costs. I roughly know what you're making. I have an idea as to who you are. You're like, I can see these things. Whereas a child, you know, you had no clue.
Oh yeah. You can start to connect the dots, right? You know, like my neighbor, complains about not having a lot of money, but he's got an F-350 in the driveway, and you know, he works as a cop, which is great. But I'm sure he's not making enough money to comfortably afford things like that. And so, I mean, people do that stuff all the time. But yeah, no shame. I mean, there's a certain satisfaction to me about paying in cash for stuff. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It just feels old school. Like, it just feels good, right? Like, I go to an old school barbershop and the guy cuts my hair and shaves my neck and we have a good conversation, and I give the guy a $20 bill and walk out. And it's like the most old school, genuine transaction that I do every couple of weeks, you know, like, it's just the coolest, easiest thing. And I love it. And you know, the same thing we were talking about, my kids and I were talking about gas. And like, when I grew up, we didn't swipe credit cards. I'm a little older than you guys, but I didn't swipe credit cards at the pump. You had to go inside with cash, you know, and you had to like decide, do I want to like come back in for change, or do I want to like, do I want to just put enough in, you know? So
it's cold.
Or like you judge like, well, maybe the tank could take $20, but if it's under, then I got to go back in for the change. If I give the guy $20, so I'm going to go in and give him a 10. I'm just going to put $10 in, cause I don't want to go back in. But like, that type of thought process doesn't cross our minds when we use a credit card, right? Like, we just swipe the thing in the gas pump. And we don't even look. How many people look at the total on the gas pump even anymore? You just swipe the card, fill it with gas, hang it back up, and leave. And nobody looks. They're like, "How much was that? I don't even know how much a tank of gas is." But, you know, so there's all those things, and it's just going old school. I'm kind of old school at heart, and I'm a big fan of going.
I think that's why you enjoy the process, though. The straight razor compared to just like zipping it around, you know, able to talk to somebody instead of like, well, just text me. Like,
it's
about the process, not just the product.
Oh, people don't understand the value that comes from sort of these old school connections. And, you know, like, I used to kind of roll my eyes at the old guys who are like, oh, you kids don't know how to like just have a conversation anymore or sit down. And you know, the older I get, the more I see there's some truth to what they were saying, and in that, we've kind of lost connection with some of that. And like, I'm not an old school, like, I think we need to go back to the way things were. Like, I'm a huge fan of things changing and technology and, you know, crypto and all this stuff that's going on. And I'm excited to watch it all unfold, but I think we still have to stay grounded. And especially paying off debt is such an old school sort of thing. It's like biblical times. We're talking about, you know, getting out of debt. You're a slave to the lender sort of thing. And that still holds true. Those are timeless lessons. And let's never forget that being out of debt is really freedom. It's more freedom than people realize, because you get comfortable, right? Like you can have your credit card payment taken right out of your bank account. You never really notice. You don't really go check the balance. It's just the $30 a month minimum payment comes out, blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't feel like much, but it's there. It like has a mental weight on us. Debt creates like a mental load. And I think it's like an extra strain on you personally, but on your family and on your relationship. I'm a big fan of, you know, especially married couples should get out of debt as fast as they can. I think it clears the air of one thing that can be a problem. Like, the last thing marriages need are more complications, and take finances out of that equation and just agree to be, you know, that debt is no for you and your family. And then, you can go forward a lot, lot more peacefully, in my opinion.
I dig that. No debt.
No debt, man. No debt. That might be my next product. No debt.
That's a good one. I dig it. So before we wrap this one up, I wanted to talk a little bit about what people can expect if they sign up to Finance and Fatherhood, the newsletter, as well as Frugability Finance. We keep hearing the terms, but kind of give them a glimpse into what it is they're going to be signing up for. And I'll have links to both below.
Yeah. So you don't need to remember the URLs, but so the Finance and Fatherhood newsletter has been my focus this year. And right now I'm putting out a big newsletter every month that covers typically one finance topic and one parenting topic. And so like last month we covered the stages of fatherhood and how the passage of time and things like that. And then I also covered how crushing your day job can make your life a lot better in many aspects. And so it's things like that. It's just kind of my musings every month, the best things I could think of to write about every month. And I release it on Friday mornings. To me, Friday mornings feel lighter than the rest of the week. Like there's some, I love Fridays. I love Friday mornings because it feels like the best is to come, because I'm still a 9-to-5 guy. So like my weekends still feel like weekends, but yeah, right. They're still a thing. So I haven't dropped weekends from the vocab. I don't think I ever will either because I sort of like the rhythm. Even when I'm working on my own here soon, I'll keep a similar rhythm because my kids are off school on the weekends too. So nothing's going to change, but Friday morning newsletter, always like timeless type things, topics that you can carry forward. I stay away from too much current event stuff and no politics or anything like that. It's just something to learn about being a father and about money. And then frugability is frugability.com. It's my finance store where I'm going to release finance products. I've got an app coming down the pipeline that's being developed for that. I'm going to release some finance books there and some courses that can help people. And mostly it's a way of sharing my financial journey, specifically just to finance. So the finance and fatherhood is a little bit more personal and a little bit more my day-to-day life. But the frugability is, if you want the goods, if you want the technical stuff, if you want the spreadsheets, and just get right into the grind of the work in the workshop, that's it.
That's awesome. I mean, it's been great to catch up. It's been a wild few years.
Yeah, it has. It sure has.
I appreciate all your time for coming on the show. I appreciate your insights. I think it's going to help a lot of people, especially those who don't just listen to this, but they apply it. They apply that mindset to their lives.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Anybody, look forward to it.
100%. Yeah. For anybody that wants to reach out and touch base and maybe pick your brain a little bit before they jump on the newsletter or maybe commit to one of the courses or whatnot, how could they do that?
Well, I'm on Twitter all the time. Twitter handle is Mark Allen Bovaire. The newsletter is markallenbovaire.substack.com. Those are the two spots to find me almost all the time. So
very cool. Yeah. For anybody listening that's on the fence, just do it. Like you will not regret. You've upgraded my timeline significantly. And especially, like I said, as I went through this personal journey on not wanting to be beholden to anybody. Wanting to get rid of my debt. You were the first person I thought of. Good. So the message you're putting out there, dude, it's so needed, and it's appreciated. I'm listening, I'm reading, I'm applying. So you have at least one person awesome. On top of your clients that is using your information.
Well, great. I'm glad it helped. And I look forward to seeing you tweet out that you're debt free here soon.
Oh yeah. We'll get that electronic fist bump going.
I can't wait.
All right. Thanks again for coming on.
Yep. Take care.
All right. Thanks, for everybody that tuned in, this has been another episode on the Family Alpha Podcast. Apply the information, improve your life. Take care.
Thanks for listening. You can join our private men's only community at thefraternityofexcellence.com. And don't forget to find Zach on Twitter and Instagram with the handle @ZachSmall_.